I put my notes up there. Sometimes people think I speak without notes. I don't. I always have notes. I don't know how you were in school, but the way I was in school was I took many, many notes. I think the reason I took notes was it kept me awake. But then I discovered I never read my notes. Just think what I might have become had I read my notes. It's always a joy for me to be here. This morning, I think it's a special joy because this has been a special week. When there are moments of full emotion, something happens to time. Like it feels to me now that last Sunday was a long time ago. And Wednesday, because usually I'm here on Wednesdays, I do spiritual counseling here and do what I can to make trouble for Michael and Pat and Beverly. I do that pretty well. It was very quiet here on Wednesday. It's like a big energy has moved from this space and is now bringing that energy to a place I think is in deep need of energy in Los Angeles. And it's fascinating when one has a competent leader, there is a tendency to grow to rely and to trust that leader and that leadership, and we kind of defer. And then when that leader moves on, there's a kind of shock of, wait a minute, who's around? And of course, the proof of any great leader is that when they leave, the group that they've led starts remembering what they've learned. Because what one learns from such a person as John McClane is really the fuller truth of one's own being and how to trust more fully one's own energy to make the decisions that need to be made, to do what needs to be done. And it's an amazing time. John McClane responded to a call. And he was called from this place to somewhere that needed him at this moment. And I have the sense that we're all called. The church is called to stand up at such a moment. And it's a joy for me to be participating in this and watching this happen. And it's good. And at such a time, we need an extra energy, which reminds me of our washing machine. So we've been having a little trouble with our washing machine. Our washing machine is 5 years old, and it started having funny error messages on the front. Ruth decided that, 5 years old, it needs new hoses. The washing machine is stacked, and so I pushed it out of the way so each of us could kind of squeeze in to see if what we could see in the back. We saw, yes, there are hoses, but there wasn't anything we could do about them. So yesterday there were some friends who were helping the process who, when they looked at hoses, would know what to do with them. And after a great deal of moving around and squeezing through and looking at the hoses, it was determined that for the past 5 years, the hot water faucet had never been turned on. Now, you think that's funny, but what's really funny is that Ruth and I consistently have little arguments about what temperature clothes should be washed in. You know, so all this time, she's going, it says cold, and I'm saying, it'll work with warm. Do it warm, wash, cold, rinse. And we're doing all these things, nothing's happening, it's all cold. You know, in a top loader, you'd kind of feel the water sometimes. You'd have a sense. The front load, nobody ever feels the water. There's water there. Who thinks? And I thought, what a perfect event for talking about the faucet, the part of us that we turn off. You know, it's like we think we're running on 6 cylinders or 8 cylinders or how many, and what energy within ourselves have we learned to turn off? And the real time we meet that is when something happens in our lives and there's some kind of change or some kind of loss or some kind of problem, and we come right up against it and we say, where is that energy? Where is the energy I need to get on with my life? And it just was never turned on. What was never turned on in you? I mean, just think about that. You thought at the beginning they turned on all the knobs. I love the image. There's always another knob waiting to be turned on to give us the fuller energy that we need to wash our clothes. You know that during the Jewish year, we read the text of the Torah, a portion at a time during the year. The Torah in its literal sense, meaning the teaching that contains the first 5 books of the Hebrew Bible. The Hebrew Bible, what Jews call the Hebrew Bible, Christians call the Old Testament, and it's the same book. And we both use it as the foundation. For Christianity, the Old Testament is the foundation of what Christianity has become. For Judaism, the Hebrew Bible is the foundation for what Judaism has become. So we read some of it differently, but it's the same text. It is possible, however, that you don't read a portion of the first 5 books every week. So I need to tell you which portion has been read, because it's made for this week. It's the story of the scouts. We're in the book of Numbers. Anybody wants to check? I think it starts with chapter 13. So we came out of Egypt. And Egypt, remember, is a metaphor. It's not a geographical location. So it's not saying that Egypt is a place of enslavement. It's saying the metaphor of Egypt in ancient days was a place where we forgot who we are, where we lost our sense of self, and when we do that, we fall under the control of others, and we are deeply stuck. So the story is that we left Egypt. We start wandering in the wilderness and we're heading toward the promised land. Actually, the archaeologists now say that the trip on foot was 11 days. So we leave, we have various adventures because we're not going straight, and then we get right on the border of the promised land, and Moses sends 12 scouts to take a look at the land. Do you know that story? He picks one of the important men from each of the 12 tribes, sends 12 guys out, scout the land, and let us know what's in store for us. So they go, and after 40 days, the scouts come back. And 10 of the 12 scouts say, there's no way we can go in there. the land is ruled by giants. It's like, and they said, we felt like we were grasshoppers in their sight. And so we were grasshoppers to them. It's fascinating the way it was said. You know, our feelings are picked up by those we're with. It's very interesting because one of the rabbinic commentators taking that, you know, wonders what exactly does that mean and has the notion that the people of the land are looking at grasshoppers and somebody says, does that grasshopper have a face on it? Is that taking it very literally. They say there's no way we can go there, and the people get terribly afraid. And the people, you know, just the will goes out of them. The possibility evaporates. Like, we thought we could do it, and now we can't do it. There were actually two of the 12 who came back and said, man, it's ours. Let's do it. The two of the people who did that were Joshua and Caleb. Now, as a consequence of the fear that arose at that time, 1 year of wandering was added for every day that the scouts scouted the land. So they scouted the land for 40 days. That's where the 40 years comes from. So we're going to have to stay in the wilderness for one year for each day. And that will give time for the generation with the consciousness of enslavement to die out. Because those people who are so stuck with that consciousness can't get into a promised land. You know, you could put it right in front of them and they'll never be able to get it. It'll still be too far away. The interesting thing about promised lands, incidentally, is that every promised land will become our next place of stuckness. I don't know if you ever noticed that in your life. But we have the notion that as soon as I get here, it'll be good forever. And fortunately, that's not so. Why fortunately? Because if that were so, our growth and our expansion and the evolution of consciousness on this planet would stop. So we travel in stages. And we do what we can at any given time. And then that becomes our pattern, our stuckness, our normal, and we become enslaved to it. And then it's time for us to, okay, open up our vision again. And it's a cycle. In Jewish tradition, we celebrate the cycle every year with Passover. You know, now sometimes a personal cycle will go with that, and sometimes it'll come up at other times. But we got a cycle right now in a church community. Here comes the cycle. Are we going to get to our promised land? You know? And not just get to normal again, but what's our next step? And to allow ourselves, all of us, to put energy into creating, evolving that next step. And here's the problem. So you decide, okay, I'm really going to get on with my life. I'm going to get on with my life as an individual. I'm going to get on with my life in a relationship. I'm going to get on with my life at work. I'm going to get on with my life as a community. And so you open up your dreams. And let's say you get a dream of what I'd really like to be doing, or what I'd really like to be having, or who I'd really like to be. As an individual, as a family, as a community, what happens? If you really do it well enough, resistance and fear arises. If you really do it well enough, resistance and fear arises. Now, a lot of times we look at that resistance and fear and use it to stop going, but the one thing I'd like you to carry with you today is that when we dream high enough and those fears awaken, those fears and the resistances are evidence that our dreams are big enough. And if you ever think you have a dream of what you'd like to be, what you'd like to be doing, and what you'd like to be having, and you can picture it and everything is fine and there is no fear, it's not a big enough dream. Because it is a function of the psychology of our beings that our normal is where we're comfortable, and anything out of the comfort zone is going to be uncomfortable. That's how it always is. Anything worse than the comfort zone is going to be very painful. Anything better than the comfort zone is going to feel, we're going to think it's great, and we're going to get afraid. So the trick is to utilize our fear as evidence that the dreams are meaningful and important. To go out into our promised land just like the scouts did. And that's the whole teaching. You want to know where you want to go? Scout out the land. What do you look like in there? Who's around you? What are you doing? What are you having? What are you being? And then when the fears come up and say, well, I can't do that. Well, I can't have that. Well, that's impossible. You go to the fears and you say, thank you. You know what happens to a fear when you say thank you? Fears don't expect that. You say thank you. You are the evidence that my dream is right. You are the evidence that my vision is an evolutionary vision. So come with me into that vision. No killing the fear. Don't kill the fear. The fear is evidence. I want to keep the fear. And with that fear, walk into the land, whatever your land is. So I'd like to ask all of you now to take a gentle breath and let your eyes close. And just take a moment to consider that you are being invited to scout out the land, the next promised land. Oh, it won't be forever, but it's the place of your next evolution. We are evolving beings. We are creative beings. What are you doing in that land? What do you have in that land? Who are you being in that land? More important than what you have is who you are. Allow yourself to take a few moments and scout out that next promised land. And if you're really doing it, notice the whispers of a consciousness stuck in normal that says, you can't do that. That's too much for you. Be careful. And when those whispers arise, welcome them. Yes. Confirmation. Confirmation that my visions of a promised land are of a promised land. Confirmation that I am stepping beyond my comfort zone, outside my normal, beyond business as usual. Step into that promised land. and with gratitude for the voices of fear that arise. Gently take them with you. You can live here too. Before you open your eyes, looking around the promised land, however clearly it appears at this moment, simply tell it, I'll be back. I'm on my way. And it's not going to be 40 years. And it's not going to be 40 days because I'm going to visit you later today. And I'm going to visit you tomorrow. And I'm going to start getting used to being in this fuller place, celebrating the evolution of my being. And then taking a gentle breath, opening your eyes. Moments of significant change are always challenging to us. And when somebody leaves who's been important to us, that's a moment of challenge. That's a moment of serious, significant change. And moments of significant, serious change are always moments of incredible opportunity. We get to take greater responsibility for the shape of our community because that is what we are called to now. All right. So I am grateful to be part of this whole process with you. Dream big. Thank you.